Welcome to the podcast of this Brecan information session. Information sessions are recorded at the Brecan Resource Centre and can be borrowed in CD format from the Resource Library. Sessions are copyrighted and are for personal home use only. If you would like to know more about this and other sessions, please contact Brecan on 1300 781 500. We hope you enjoy this podcast.
Welcome to Volume 83 in the Brecan What's On Information Sessions, a series of talks produced for people with gynecological or breast cancer, their families and friends. This session was recorded on the 14th of November 2012 at the Queen Victoria Women's Centre, located in Melbourne's CBD. In this session, Judy Purbrick, Senior Physiotherapist at Mercy Health Lymphedema Clinic, talks about lymphedema and its association with gynecological and breast cancer. We hope that you find this session informative.
Hi, you're welcome. And nice to have a good turnout for our talk this morning. I was just saying to Kelly, you know, they have such an interesting program here, and sometimes I feel like coming to talk about lymphedema is not the good news story. A lot of women and men, you know, are sort of quite anxious about the prospect of developing lymphedema, but I hope that by giving you some information and education this morning, that it just gives you a better context and gives you an opportunity to answer the questions that you might have. So I've got a bit of a presentation here. I'm very happy to take questions as we go. So my plan is just to talk a little bit about what is lymphedema, some of the common questions people have, you know, what is it, how do you get it, can you stop it, what do you do if you do get it, that sort of thing, and talk about how you might live with the risk of knowing that it is a possibility that may occur in the future or may not occur in the future, and what you can do to help yourself now. So I hope that will sort of cover the sort of things people are wanting to know about. So just a bit about where I come from. I work at the Mercy Health Lymphedema Service. So that's a service that's been in operation now since 1994. And the service has always had a multidisciplinary sort of focus. So we have special doctors, we have trained therapists who will vary in background between being physios, OTs or nurses. Currently we have all those disciplines on staff. We have social workers. We have a sessional dietitian. We also have the government's compression garment support program. So it's quite a comprehensive service. And while most of our services happen either at East Melbourne in the satellite clinic or at Heidelberg at Mercy, we do also have the opportunity to come and do some information sessions like this away from the hospital. So it's nice for us to be able to get out as well. And the LCGP is just the acronym for the Lymphedema Compression Garment Program, which is a Victorian State Government subsidy program for eligible people to help with the cost of compression garments. So what is lymphedema? Sometimes people think that lymphedema is too much fluid. They've got too much fluid. If they can just get rid of that fluid, everything will be alright. But this is the definition that we work by. It's a swelling. And it's caused by a problem with the lymphatic system. So you've got a normal amount of fluid, but the system that moves that fluid or transports that fluid around our body has been damaged in some way. And hence, you get a problem with swelling. Swelling most commonly occurs in arms or legs, in people we see, but at times we do see people with swelling, you know, affecting trunk areas as well, perhaps a breast, perhaps genital regions, perhaps head and neck. So it depends where the damage has occurred as to where the swelling might follow. People often ask, well, how often is this a problem? And there are you know, better stats about that now. So certainly after breast cancer, I'm sure probably some of you have already done some reading and homework, and what the literature reviews tell us is that about 1 in 5 people after breast cancer surgery and treatment will develop a problem with lymphedema. But I want to sort of emphasise that most of those will be mild problems, all right? So it's certainly increasingly rare to see severe problems in a climate where people have much better access to education and early information. And I've been at the clinic now for about 12 years, and I can say that the incidence of seeing people with sort of severe swelling is much less And there's a number of reasons for that. Certainly you're well aware too that the 5-year survival rates or survivorship rates after cancer are improving as well. And as I was doing this presentation, I was, you know, updated this again, and you know, it's gone from 85 to 89, nearly 90% now. So that goes on improving as well. And as that improves, you know, the amount of lymphedema is lessening. So they work together. Now, the 20% figure, or the 1 in 5 figure, applies particularly to the breast cancer population. Those who've had treatment for cancer for other types of cancer, so for gynecological cancers or melanomas, the incidence rates are a bit different. So, and there's smaller populations that information is being collected about. So it depends really what area has had treatment for cancer, obviously the stage of the cancer, about the different incidences. Does anybody know what SLNB stands for? No? I'm sure some of you who may have had breast cancer will have had or been offered what's called a sentinel lymph node biopsy. Some of you heard that term? Yeah. So often with early cancers and small tumours, people are offered the opportunity to have what's called a sentinel lymph node biopsy, which means that the doctor will isolate the primary lymph node that the tumour is draining to, and that's the one that they will check. So they take one or just a couple of lymph nodes rather than doing a full clearance of lymph nodes, which was common practice 10, 15 years ago.
Are those people still at risk of getting lymphed
out? Yep, so yes. It reduces the risk, but it doesn't eliminate it, no. But certainly, I've just got a bit more information about that. So certainly these are some stats from 2010 from Carolyn Baker, who's a Melbourne breast surgeon. And she reported that, you know, out of 14,000 breast cancers that had surgery, so the axillary is now hit, but they had axillary surgery, 10,000 of those, there was 10,000 that had, so 4,000 might have just had breast surgery, you know, 10,000 out of the 14,000 had surgery to the armpit. The majority of those only had a sample of lymph nodes taken. 2,000 out of the 14,000 had to have, you know, more lymph nodes taken. And I'm sure some of you have had the experience of having a lymph node sample and having to go back for more surgery, or the doctor decided that was the best thing that, you know, for you. So what has the stats that are now at hand say that the incidence of lymphedema after a more conservative procedure is less, you know, so it's dropped from 1 in 5 to 2 to 6% amongst that population. So the 20% figure is very much an average. Does that answer that question? I think we, yeah. So why am I at risk with lymphedema? Perhaps this is a good opportunity just to say that there's sort of different reasons people get lymphedema. And in our clinic, we would see people who have lymphedema following cancer treatment because the treatment and the surgery has damaged the lymphatic system in some way. And that's what we call secondary lymphedema. So people have had a normal lymphatic system for a long period of time, an event has happened, an illness has happened that's caused damage, and it's no longer able to do the job that it did before. So that's what we call secondary lymphedema. But another type of lymphedema that's present in the community as well, called primary lymphedema. And this occurs when someone is born with a lymphatic system that's not normal, it hasn't formed properly. So it can be present at birth, or quite often that type of lymphedema develops in adolescence and puberty. The primary lymphedema more commonly affects lower limbs than upper limbs. Yes, a question.
Would that be pretty much your basis too?
Well, it's an interesting question you ask. I am aware of a case recently in Melbourne where someone had a baby diagnosed with lymphedema in utero. That was the first time I had heard of that being diagnosed in utero. So obviously it is possible for that level of assessment to now occur. Yeah. So people often want to know what would put me, you know, at risk of being in that 20%. So sometimes, largely, it's things that are outside our control. Like having a baby. You can't sort of choose what sort of labour you're going to get. It's outside our control. So certainly the extent of the surgery and the lymph node dissection will be a factor. whether or not you have radiation treatment will be a factor. Others that have been documented through literature are if there's additional trauma, if there's infections, BMI stands for body mass index, so certainly the further people are away from a healthy weight range, that becomes another risk factor for developing lymphedema. And if you're not moving well and don't have normal movement, that they're sort of factors that certainly can contribute. No one is probably a cause on its own, but certainly, you know, some of those things are the drivers that will precipitate lymphedema. I just briefly want to talk to you about what the lymphatic system is. Has anyone sort of seen some pictures of the lymphatic system or know much about it? It's often mysterious, isn't it, until something goes wrong. And then you think, oh, well, that's what it is.
Now we know everything.
Now, I don't know why the picture hasn't come up here. I had a nice picture there for you. Anyway, you have to Google a picture. The lymphatic system has three main parts. It's part of the circulation system, but it's sort of it's its own little system within that. So there's a system of channels or lymphatic vessels that carry fluid, and they start under the skin all over our body.
They look like veins?
Yeah, they're like very thin veins. Yes. And there's sort of ones that are just under the skin, and there's some deeper ones of those as well. So it's like the tree trunk and the branches. So they start off with the little roots and they join together and you get the big trunk at the end. So the deep trunk actually takes the fluid back into the veins near the neck. So it joins back up with the venous system again. The other thing you'll be aware of now is that there's lymphatic nodes as well and lymphatic glands. But they're the same thing. So a lymph gland or a lymph node is just the same name a different name for the same thing. Does anyone know where the lymph nodes tend to lie in our body? In the neck? Yep.
Under our
arms. Yep, under our arms.
And
the groin. Yeah. So you've got some six main groups. These ones are called the cervical lymph nodes, one group on each side of your neck. These ones are called the axillary lymph nodes because they're in the armpit on each side. And we have groin lymph nodes, the inguinal lymph nodes.
How many are in each? Is it the same amount in each, like, you know, if you've got 100 here, 10 here, 15 here, or whatever? Is there a certain amount?
They seem to vary a little bit between individuals. And often the surgeons will say, well, you know, I took 14 or 30 or something. There might be, you know, 25, 30 in different sort of regions. So it can vary a little bit from person to person. And they're quite small, sort of P-shaped size often. And the function of the lymph nodes is to be like a filter station. So the fluid comes up the channel to the lymph node, it's filtered, and the good part of that will go back into the main circulation. The lymph nodes will break down things they don't want to go back into the main circulation, or they also have a role in our immune system, so they might help mount an immune response from the lymph nodes.
So when they break it down, what happens then with the broken down stuff?
It doesn't work?
Does it go out of the lymph system? Or?
The stuff that they don't want, you mean the waste?
Yeah, the waste.
There's cells that gobble up the things that the body no longer needs. Mm. Yeah, and they just dispose of it at the cellular level.
What's going on in our bodies and we didn't even know?
Right. I think the main thing to recognise is that each group of lymph nodes is responsible for draining a certain area of the body. So, for example, if you've had breast surgery, you've had some lymph nodes taken from one armpit, just be aware that armpit would normally drain the arm on the same side, the breast, and this corner of the trunk. Okay, so front and back. Same on the other side. The ones at the neck, the cervical nodes, will drain half the face and half the neck. And the ones on the other side will do the job on the other side. The groin nodes will drain the limb on that side and this corner of the trunk as well. So when there's been some disturbance to lymph nodes in one territory, that's the territory that where congestion or swelling may occur. It's not going to spread anywhere else though. Okay, if you've had lymph nodes taken out of one armpit,
Everywhere else, you've still got normal numbers doing their job. So it's only the one area that is where there is change.
Of course, if the lift needs to be the left side, you are perfectly better. But it has just become the right side without not.
No. Not unless you've had other surgery on the armpit on that side. It would just be the only area that where there may be trouble is where there's been surgery. But certainly, it's not going to spread. And that's a common question for people.
Yeah.
So this little diagram's going to work. just to remind you that how it might fit into our circulation system. So circulation fluids normally leave our heart in the arteries, and they go down through the tree root and vessels, the capillaries, feed the tissues, and then it gets mopped back up and goes back to the heart. So most of that's going in the veins, but a smaller volume is going in another set of pipes, the lymphatic system. Does anyone know what sort of fluid volume may be moving in the lymphatic system over a day? Lots. You want to hazard a guess? How many litres do you reckon that system's got to pop?
Not even going to guess.
It's actually smaller numbers than you might imagine.
40 mil.
40 mil? Larger than that.
So 2 litres.
Yeah, about 2 to 4 litres of fluid will come back through the lymphatic system. So it's a system of pipes that will carry fluid, but sort of smaller quantities than our arteries and veins. The fluid here doesn't have any blood cells, so it's mainly water. Bacteria, cells the body's finished with, and cells that are larger and move more slowly around our body. Okay, so things that move quickly go back in the veins and mush around, the slower things move back in the lymphatic system. And the lymphatic system has a weak pumping action. If you know your arteries are strong, you can think of pulses away. Lymphatics only pump at about 6 or 8 beats a minute. So, it's a weak pumping action.
Can we get a cheap sheet at the end?
There's lots of places I can direct you for more information. Yeah. I just have to check with work whether you can have this. I don't know about. So the answer is maybe. But they are taking a copy. So if you want to listen again, you can do it. Now, so how do you think you might recognise, lymphedema starting?
Swelling?
Yeah.
Infection?
An infection.
Pain, pressure.
Hot.
Might feel hot.
Might sleep a bit harder than the other.
Yes, clothes might feel different, yes.
Feeling weak? Yes.
What if you had leg swelling? What do you think you'd notice if you had leg?
Maybe feel heavier.
Sorry?
Heavier?
Might feel heavier? Mm-hmm. Yep. So you can see there's no one thing that's going to establish a diagnosis convincingly, and sometimes those things that you're describing are a bit vague, aren't they?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but they're the things you need to pay attention to.
Mm-hmm.
So certainly the National Breast and Ovarian Cancer Centre, through the literature review, has identified these are factors that people report. So swelling is the most common. So they notice some swelling. Typically, that swelling though is different sometimes from other swelling that you may experience. So it tends to be fluctuating swelling when it first begins. So sometimes people might notice that their hand feels a bit puffy at the end of the day. When they look at it in the morning, it's fine.
Mm-hmm.
Or they have a few hot days and they feel like their foot's a bit swollen, but you rest for a couple of days, the weather gets cooler and it's fine again. Sometimes people notice clothes, difference with clothes, and so their shirt might feel tight, or their jewellery might leave a mark, or their rings might feel tight. If you've got swelling in your leg, you might notice that your socks are cutting in, or your shoes aren't as comfortable as they used to be. But often that swelling will come and go a little bit. It won't necessarily pop up overnight and, declaring itself. So it's about being able to pay attention to subtle changes. And I'm sure that's tricky also in the climate of having treatment. You know that sometimes when you're having chemo or radiotherapy, you hold a bit more fluid, or your body's not feeling like it's behaving as it usually does. So it's about just paying attention as much as you can, and if there's a change that you haven't noticed before, that's what you need to report. other common symptoms that people will experience, not necessarily all together, but sometimes people will say their limb just feels a bit tingly. But then most people who've had breast surgery will, you know, will have an area of numbness under your arm anyway. So again, distinguishing those things can be tricky. Aching and heaviness are common symptoms. Sometimes tightness, sometimes the limb will feel warm. Some people describe burning feelings. But they're often quite subtle. You know, unless someone has an infection, you know, it's not likely to be something that's loud and worrying. So pay attention to small changes and report them. And I think the other thing to keep in mind is that when things swell, it's not always a thing. You know, things swell for other reasons. They swell with hormone changes, they swell with medication changes, they swell with the weather. How many of you have had swollen legs on an aeroplane flight? Yep. How many of you have had sort of rings that feel tight in summer, normally? Or shoes, sandals that feel tight? So there's some seasonal changes as well. So you pay attention, report changes, but get them checked out. Don't panic.
Can I ask a specific question? All those things in that, but you say if you've just had breast cancer like a week or 2 weeks ago, and you go through the process, and you had all those things, but it's really not related to that. You just sort of tell your doctor, or you just sort of keep it in the back of your mind.
I think you're always best to ask questions about things that you're concerned about.
Best
to ask questions. I suppose often as well we need to talk about, you know, treatment related swelling.
Yeah.
You know, any sort of surgical intervention will usually be accompanied by a bit of swelling. Mm. And often around the treatment time, that's treatment related swelling that will settle. You know, so something that's sort of persisting, or that you've got questions about, just ask. Yeah. Sometimes people have, you know, temporary swelling, for example, with chemo. Sometimes people will get sort of swelling with chemo, like a treatment-related side effect that settles. It's not lymphedema. So we're really reluctant to usually apply that diagnosis during a treatment phase.
Oh, okay. Because it's always sort of in the back of your head, and you think, is it or not?
Yeah.
You know, sort of, yeah.
So certainly during a treatment phase, we respond to symptoms and help people relieve symptoms, but we're a bit reluctant to give a frank label at that stage. You need to have a bit more time under your belt. But I know that's, for a lot of people, it's quite a, you know, anxiety-inducing time. You don't know.
Thank you.
Yeah. So what can we do, you know, about, you know, often in this time while you're waiting and you don't know, you know, and that might go on for years. You know, I think the important thing to keep in mind is that 80% of people are not going to get any problems with swelling. The majority of people will not get problems with swelling. A small number will. And we want you to sort of pay attention and get help early, because that will sort of give you the best outcome down the track. But there's a number of things that you can do to be looking after yourself now that may in fact be, you know, prevention. Sometimes we can't tell. We know that, for example, that when people get infections, and the sort of infections that we worry about are when people get a cellulitis. Is that a word people have heard before? So cellulitis is a skin infection that can come often with broken skin, where a limb will become red, hot, swollen, sore. Something like that can make a limb swell up very quickly. And it seems that after you've had some lymph nodes removed, that particular limb is a bit more at risk of that happening than before that happened. So you can pay attention to looking after your skin and minimising the risk of getting cellulitis, which may in fact be prevention, but we're not going to be able to tell you that because if you never had an infection, we wouldn't know. So these are some of the things that we can do. I just want to go through those with you. So perhaps the thing that I want to stress above everything else is it's important to try and remain active and to exercise. And I'm sure that you've probably heard from a number of sources throughout treatment that maintain even low levels of exercise during treatment helps people, or minimises the side effects of treatment, helps you sort of manage treatment better. Now, I know people are often really tired and you can't do a lot, but certainly just maintaining what activity you can is important. And as you sort of progress through, you know, treatment and out the other side, it's good to actually then make returning to normal exercise levels a priority. So actually making a goal of getting back normal movement and normal strength in limbs that have had surgery means that you're giving your circulation the best possible support. in years gone by, it doesn't happen so often now, but if we get people coming back, say, after breast surgery, and they've been nursing their arm, you know, and it's really stiff,
yeah.
It's weak and it doesn't move, it's not going to be, of course it's going to be tending to swell because they're not they're not using it, the muscles are weak, circulation hasn't gone well to support. And we see things improve when people do get normal movement and normal strength back. So, you know, again, aiming for normal movement and normal strength and just persisting even low-level exercise is something that will help.
And I found swimming, I went on a holiday recently and I was doing exercise but I was worried about stretching and I swam at Bali in the pool. Had to get that in. And I found since then it feels 10 times better. I didn't do the strenuous swimming, I just played in the water.
Yeah.
But I did move under the water.
And I didn't pay her to say that.
And underneath my arm it just feels like 10 times better. I can't tell you how much better it feels. And I was scared. You know, being very ginger with it.
Yeah. So it's about returning to normal activity and feeling confident.
Yeah.
And just gaining confidence that you can do those things and it's safe to do.
Yeah.
And so often people will need a bit of supervision, you know, if they sort of walk through or what's safe to do next.
Well, now I feel more confident.
The other thing is that we know from people who have lymphedema, they will tell us that their swelling is worse in the heat and worse sometimes if they overdo things. And that's a very, you know, it's going to vary from person to person what overdoing it is. But I'm talking about things like people who, I had a woman years ago who, she'd had breast cancer, her arm had been fine, but she went out one weekend and sailed all weekend and she hadn't sailed since her breast surgery. It was too much. She came in Monday morning and was swollen up. So it's about actually taking things step by step. And it's important just to sort of, you know, help your system adjust to the change. So we want you to not do too much too quickly, but not too little for too long either. Okay, so it's about finding that balance. And it's also important to care for your skin because avoiding complications is avoiding problems. So you're probably, most of you, well aware of the benefits of exercise, but certainly in this case it's going to help support your circulation. It has benefits also with weather and side effects of treatment, with mood, with sleep, with weight control, all those things. So it's an important sort of component of a healthy lifestyle into the future. Certainly now there's other sort of good research saying it's important to use your arm, your leg or your neck as normally as possible, but just slowly and gently. Now 10 years ago even, you know, the advice was different and the research wasn't there to support these sort of practices. And I'm sure some of you know other women or men who've had breast cancer, they were probably told to, you know, not overdo it with their arm. There was lots of don'ts, don't do this, don't do that, da 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 da. We now have really good evidence, and there's been much better research in the last few years, where people have done resisted exercise, they've done weights training, and that has neither caused more lymphedema nor has it exacerbated lymphedema for those who already had swelling. So it is safe to pursue, you know, return to normal movement, return to resistance training and strength training. But I just stress that sometimes you'll need supervision to sort of
navigate.
You don't start off with 20 kilo weight. No, exactly. Just pace yourself. You don't paint the whole house in a weekend, you know. Just try and do it step by step. Stop for coffee every now and again. Another exciting piece of information that again has just been published last year, and I'm sure some of you have probably come across already, is that women who increased or maintained an average of 3 hours exercise a week after diagnosis, even if you hadn't been used to doing exercise before, decreased their risk of mortality compared to inactive women. So what it's saying is that doing the 3 hours of exercise a week is what the National Physical Activity Guidelines say, recommend. So you've probably heard before from the Heart Foundation that half an hour of moderate intensity exercise most days of the week is 3 hours.
Yes.
Is what, you know, has some protective effects for us. And so this is really, you know, extra support and encouragement to try and make good habits around exercise. And just in terms of general principles, we encourage you to sort of, you know, warm up, cool down, start slowly. We want you to aim to return to previous activities, but just do it step by step. And sometimes it's the time to take up a new activity that you haven't done before. And I know at Brecan here there's lots of opportunities to try that. There'll be yoga classes and Tai Chi and, you know, dancing, music, whatever. what we're encouraging you to do is just moderate intensity exercise, things that, you know, are, that have movement, so you're getting your muscles to sort of stretch and contract and relax and get nice pumping action. So walking, cycling, dancing, yoga, all those things. And try and find things that you like to do. We don't want it to be like, you know, taking medicine that you don't like. We want it to be things that actually make you feel good, that you enjoy doing, that perhaps are mixed with socialising. So again, that's just the physical activity guidelines. Putting together at least 30 minutes of moderate intensity activity, preferably, you know, on most days of the week. Yeah. And I mean, 30 minutes might be too much to start with. You know, often it is after you've and you're feeling fatigued and been through treatment. So it's also possible to break that up. You know, it might be 10 minutes walking to get some milk. You know, it might be, you know, a walk around the block and then something else. You know, a longer walk around the shopping centre or something. But it can be broken up as well. And it might not be every day to start with. You know, it might just be every second day you can manage to start with in 10 minutes or 5 minutes, but it's just beginning. And people will find quite quickly they're rewarded usually. Mm-hmm. They can do more, you know, after a little while. Some of the other resources that are available for getting started, Brecan certainly, you know, has an exercise group that runs weekly or fortnightly, someone might need to remind me, but
today.
Fortnightly. Yeah. Fortnightly, yeah. So Judy runs an exercise group here fortnightly. That's well patronised and a really good starting place for people. The YMCA offer encore programs around metropolitan Melbourne from time to time, and again, another excellent sort of land-based and water-based program for women after breast cancer. Gyms, communities, and some of you will be aware of, you know, dragon boat racing. Some of you will also be aware of perhaps some Living Longer, Living Stronger programs. Some of you heard of those? No? So certainly as we get older, we need to be preserving bone strength as well. And a lot of community health centres, a lot of gyms will now run programs for old adults. A variation of Living Longer, Living Stronger, where you actually encourage to do weights at least a couple of sessions a week. So that's something else that can be done too. And some of the councils that I've made aware of one recently that actually offers very reasonable gym rates. If you're over 50, you're going to have 50 to actually qualify for not living strong or the program, and reduce rates, you know, in gyms. So it's worth, you know, doing your homework and asking your neighbours about what's available.
Can I ask a quick question again? Sorry, I'm not
sure.
You know, the water, this lady said she was in water. Can you do that when you're having chemo as well, or is it sort of...
It can't be the chlorine.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask. You know, so
you, I think you need to check out with your doctor what you're on, and you know, whether it depends if you've got a port and all sorts of things. So chemo will be delivered in different ways.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cover that.
No, it's also infection. You know, in the swimming pool.
That's why I haven't gone. I haven't been in. It was so nice. Swim in the water.
Well, I went swimming in the sea when I was having chemo. They, I mean, the whole descent was okay.
Yeah.
And
so
yeah.
Oh, I was cold.
Yeah.
Head on the
sleeve. Yeah, exactly. I was lucky.
Yeah. The other thing we encourage you to sort of take up as good habits, so apart from exercise, is actually just being paying a bit more attention to skin care. So certainly healthy skin is the best barrier to the development of infections. And so what we encourage people to do, whether they've got at risk of arm swelling or leg swelling or somewhere else, is to use a soap-free product to wash with, so something that's gentle on your skin. They can be found in supermarkets or in the pharmacy, but the main thing is just read the label and find that it's soap-free. So that will not be drying out your skin as much, and to moisturise daily. So just with a water-based moisturiser, good quality, you know, and that is helping to keep your skin you know, healthy and minimises the chance then of other trauma. Extra things you can do if you're at risk of arm swelling is to just be good about wearing gloves in situations where you might easily get scratched. So you've probably read about the garden, taking care of the laundry, you've got your hands in chemicals and things, and sometimes even just doing the dishes, you know, if you've got sharp things and the soap and water. Yes?
Can I ask a question?
Yes.
Yeah. I've been looking for long sleeve garden gloves, but I haven't found them anywhere.
I've got a pair, and you can actually, I bought a pair from retail, and they're a bit big. But they're just normal boots and garden gloves, and they've got a horrible sleeve, so they're running my pants.
And you did it yourself?
No, I didn't, I just have one, but I could. But if anyone could say these things, they're normal gloves, a piece of plastic or anything that are wrapped around your arm. You just saw a mum as a cousin last week.
It's a welding glove. You know how the guys have a welding glove? They're made from the same stuff and they come in
and they're too thick.
Oh,
I think some of the gardener magazines they advertise them too.
There are some products there with leather, small leather, elbow length leather gloves, but maybe you should have to talk later.
And the gloves, I'm sure 3 years now, they're on the end of the table when I go outside and put them on.
So gloves are things, if you're somebody who's at risk of swelling in the leg again, you just need to pay that attention to extra attention to skin care on the leg. So it might be just avoiding bare feet, making sure you've got socks and shoes and things when you're outside, care with pets that jump around and want to scratch. A lot of controversy around, you know, should you have blood taken from an affected limb or an at-risk limb? Should you have injections? And I suppose there's still a weak evidence base around this issue, but there's certainly anecdotal cases of people who have had injections, had, you know, an IV put in, and then it seems to have been the trigger for developing swelling. So we encourage you to sort of certainly offer them another limb if possible. And, you know, sometimes that's the best choice and you have to just go with it. But certainly, where possible, try and avoid additional trauma. And the rationale is that, look, even an injection is only a minor skin break, but it's still something that the body has to heal. You know, you've still got some skin trauma. So if you can have skin trauma on a limb that isn't compromised in the other way, that's a better choice. Just a picture, I don't know whether you can see that in the dark, but you can see a very red, swollen arm. That's what cellulitis looks like, and that's what we're trying to avoid. You know, things that are further insults to a limb. If your limb ever develops that sort of redness, heat and swelling, what do you think you should do?
Go straight to the doctor.
Exactly. Go straight to the doctor, and you need antibiotics promptly. So you don't sort of go to bed with an arm like that, you go to emergency. And probably up to a third of people who get problems with swelling can have experiences of cellulitis. A few very unlucky people that get to be have trouble with it on an ongoing basis, in which case they often need to have low dose antibiotics all the time. But that's only a very small number. So that's preventable in a way. You know, healthy skin, taking care of yourself can help prevent, you know, some of those episodes ever occurring. We know that heat can exacerbate swelling, so certainly if it comes into summer, it's a good idea just to keep your limb cool, avoid doing things in the heat of the day, and just monitor your limb. You know, if you find you're doing something and it is feeling a bit heavy, you know, you haven't done before for a while, then you might just want to pull back, you know, and just do a slightly less session of that than you've done that gave you symptoms, and just see if that is a trigger or if it's just a one-off thing. So we just want you to pay attention. Obviously, aiming to keep your weight as much as possible, you know, as near as possible to a healthy weight range, also reduces, you know, any extra pressure on your circulation. And avoiding tight clothes, things that sort of, you know, will obstruct your circulation, or tight socks, or tight jewellery, rings, that sort of thing. Another question that people often want information about is, what should I do if I travel? What have you heard about that?
Compression garment.
Yep. Other people heard similar things.
Walk and get up
and move. Yes. Yeah. So again, there's a lack of good evidence around this issue. But every year in the clinic, we would have cases that come in and someone, you know, identifies that their a long haul aeroplane trip seems to have been triggered for this way. So our general advice is that if you're travelling by an aeroplane for under 4 hours in Australia, and you haven't got any swelling, just discuss with your therapist, but there's no strong evidence to say you must wear a sleeve. If you were travelling outside Australia more than 4 hours, and even if you don't have swelling, we would suggest that you gave some support to you. And the reason for that is that you're going to be still for a long period of time, so fluid tends to pool. And secondly, you're in an aircraft cabin that has reduced air pressure, so that can sometimes make people swell. So for both reasons, long-haul trips, we encourage you to have a well-fitting compression garment. If you have swelling, it's best to support it in both circumstances. The other things to do on a trip, and this should happen anyway, and most in-flight videos these days will tell you to move your feet and move regularly. The same things apply to your arm. You just need to exercise regularly. So let's have a think about what we can do in a time where economy is assuming we're not in business class. You do things like this, just have a little go. You can move your shoulders, circle your shoulders back. So that's easy to do, even with not much room. Yeah, you can sort of stretch your arms out in front and back. Yeah, you can do some circling of your wrists. And you can open and close your fingers. So they're the sort of things just to do regularly. While you're doing some of your feet, there's a lot of things you can do with your arms. I had one woman who flew off and she just used to put her arm up the elevator and the hostesses would come running all the time, "What's wrong?" I'm like, "Oh no, I'm just missing my arm." So, whatever it takes. And if you do need garments, it's just good to try and get those organised for us before you go, so you can make sure you've got a well-fitting garment in your head.
Excuse me, where do we get this compression?
You need to see a lymphedema therapist to get it prescribed. Yes, you won't find garments in the chemist. You'll need to go and see a lymphedema therapist, and even if you've got swelling in the leg, we suggest you've got a prescribed garment so you have the right thing for you, and it wasn't going to be too tight and uncomfortable in a 20-hour flight or whatever.
Excuse me. How many times to go to cover this thing?
I'm not sure.
How many hours or how many times can you
play? Play.
Well, I think you just need to discuss it with your therapist. I mean, there's some people who go, they have no swelling and they might fly regularly and it's no problem. But it's something you need to talk about with your therapist. They will look at your limb and your circumstances and you make a decision together. Now, we're well aware that when people have another change along the cancer journey, that usually has a psychological impact as well as a physical impact. And so the next couple of slides have been produced by some of the social workers on our team. And so I'll just read those for you, or you can read them for yourself. But certainly, living in this sort of limbo phase, sometimes you've finished treatment or you're still having treatment, you're worried about whether symptoms are going to develop, you don't know, no one can tell you. So it is important to recognise that's an uneasy time, people can be worried. So gathering information is one of the things that can help you feel a bit more in control. You know what to look for, you know what to do if symptoms do appear. And so I think it's just identifying, trying to sort of pay attention to your own needs and ask questions of people here, like in group sort of service, breast care nurses, other health professionals you see, and people can put you in touch easily with extra support. I think the other thing that our social workers would stress is that, recovering from a diagnosis and treatment of cancer takes time, and often people have high expectations of themselves and don't understand that it might take them longer than they'd imagined to things to feel like they're back to normal or back to a new normal. I think is more often what people would say to us. So it is important just to be kind to yourself and allow time and recognise that there might be sort of days where it's all okay and then days where it's not. There's sort of two steps forward and one step back. And that's a very normal journey.
Yes. I think that on the first paragraph covering the problem of diagnosis and all that, I think it's doctors more than people. Some people have high expectations and all that, about their recovery time put to normalise. I think it's more than the doctors that have high expectations.
Well, I think most people who are very experienced in the field would understand that, it's a very different journey for each person.
That would be my experience.
I think it's me that wants to be formal.
Yeah. What things to
and your friends, maybe your friends too, but you would be how you work.
And so people do talk about, you know, needing to find a new normal, you know, and that's sort of unknown, because it's sort of something you've got to build, really, and something you sort of learn as you go. And most people will find themselves forever changed by this experience. Often in good ways, but it's sort of change nonetheless. And your change, you know, adapting to that change is going to vary depending on lots of other factors. You know, there'll be some. If you're somebody who, you know, has got young children, if you're on your own, you know, if you haven't got work, you know, some things will make it harder than if there's more supports in place. So sometimes it's about recognising what, you know, whether you have got what you need around you or not, and being brave enough to ask for people around you for further help. And certainly, I think, you know, the sort of beauty of the breast cancer community in the last, 15, 20 years, there is just, you know, so much more support available, and women have done a fantastic job. You know, it's like the Breast Cancer Network of Australia, for organisations like this, in just building support and raising the profile of the needs of people on this journey. Some other issues, just, and I'm sure I don't need to spell these out for you, that, you know, a change like this is, does involve, you know, coming to grips with lots of losses, and sometimes you can't anticipate what else that's going to lead into for you. So it's just recognising there is help available, and please ask for what you need. So this is, again, Penny's just compiled sort of some of the common sort of people that will be you have contact with that can either provide that support themselves or direct you. So family and friends, the Cancer Council has a helpline, and you're aware of that. It's available 24 hours a day. You can speak to a trained cancer nurse. So sometimes you might just, you know, find yourself at a loose end, not sure what to do. You can pick up the phone and you can talk to the Cancer Helpline at any time. And they're used to fielding calls from people with issues that might be new to you, but other people have experience on that journey. Most of you will have breast cancer, have contact with breast cancer nurses, breast care nurses, and most breast cancer services these days and gynae cancer services are offered with a multidisciplinary team. So someone in that team can refer you to somebody else. If you do develop symptoms, or if you need a travel guide at any stage, we'd encourage you to see a trained lymphedema practitioner. There's now a register of these health professionals that you can Google. So the NLPR stands for the National Lymphedema Practitioner Register. You can see the website there. You just Google NLPR and you'll find it. And that will direct you to therapists in your area that have appropriate qualifications to help you with your symptoms or to with compression garment prescription.
Is that a private service?
It's a list of public and private practitioners. So anybody to sort of treat lymphedema in Australia, you need to do some further training, and the people on this register there's two categories of membership. One category of membership is for professionals, nurses, physios and occupational therapists who've done training. They're there. Some massage therapists are able to offer sort of a reduced range of services, and they are there as well. You've got appropriate training.
Would they be regarded that, you know, if you were paying for yourself, would that be maybe physios?
Yes, certainly, like a private physio would provide a number. Yes, that would be something that you can access through private health insurance. The nurses might vary. Some of those who, if they've done remedial, yeah, depending on their qualifications, some may have numbers that you can get rebates for and some won't.
Right.
Yeah. So it's just, but you'll have contact details, you can ring them and ask them. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And again, if you're noticing changes, then report them to your doctor and don't self-diagnose. Okay? Just go check out if that's actually what's going on. You might have some other reason as well. So just a couple of questions to pose to finish up. You know, sometimes people are wondering, well, if people develop symptoms, there's obviously treatments that we will put in place. Sometimes people wonder whether having a massage will stop swelling happening.
That's my question, especially the one that's called lymph drainage.
What do you think?
I've never had that, but I don't know. I've heard two theories. So one says yes, of course, and the other theory says, I don't know, there's a theory saying it could spread bad toxins around. The jury's out.
What have other people heard anything? What do you think? Would massage prevent lymphedema?
I think lymph massage is good because it's mobilising whatever, and normal massage, no, because it's too strong, basically.
It's quite safe to have a relaxation massage, unless your doctor for some reason has said otherwise, but generally a relaxation massage is fine. You would avoid firm remedial techniques on an affected area. There is a special form of massage that is involved for treating lymphedema called manual lymphatic drainage, sometimes abbreviated to MLD. And certainly that is a treatment technique. There is no evidence to say that if you go off to a practitioner and have manual lymphatic drainage every week, that will stop lymphedema happening. There isn't evidence of that. It's very much, it's a technique that you apply to someone who has stroke. So it's a treatment technique. And I think it's a little bit confusing for people because sometimes the local hairdresser is advertising lymph drainage.
No.
That's not what I'm doing. No. Okay, if I'm doing manual lymphatic drainage, I'm doing a treatment technique for someone who has a problem. So I think there's a little bit of confusion in the community too about what the language means. But a manual lymphatic drainage is a treatment technique.
Mm.
Yeah. Can you use this technique to prevent?
Well, we don't have any evidence to suggest that's the case.
But
no.
Can you learn it? Do you do it on yourself?
You can learn to do manual lymphatic drainage, and certainly for people who have lymphedema, that would sometimes be part of their care to show them how to do some self-massage, or for a support person to help them do some self-massage. But it's very much, it's directed, you plan the lymphatic drainage around a problem, like it sort of varies a bit. It's not just sort of something you roll out and say to everybody in the room. So.
Oh, it's taught how to do it. Yes. Right. Okay. They have pretty good info and they start their showing you how to do the details.
Yeah.
Just to release the discomfort.
Yeah, so sometimes people will have heaviness and symptoms that you want to see if they can relieve the symptoms.
Yeah.
But maybe it's like this. And does wearing compression sleeve prevent lymphedema?
At least there to help once you've got it.
That's right. A compression garment is a device that will help reduce and maintain swelling. I've just put one example for you to have a look at. There's hundreds of thousands of types of sleeves or stockings. But again, they're treatments. You've got the same ones? they're treatment devices. And light compression garments would be what we'd be using for somebody who wants a travel garment that doesn't have stretching. The stronger ones and different designs for people who have problems.
It's also given my person at least the donated new staff up the place, and it's just sort of across the top shoulder thing. And it sometimes it's really comfortable to wear. That move all the time.
Yeah, reduces the symptoms.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
But again, it's a treatment device.
You're
wearing it for a purpose. We don't want people to
think you have it.
You get one and it's going to stop it coming.
Yes. Can I ask another silly question? Because I'm only just, it's not about me though, but I've been bombarded with all this information from all different people. I was told that when you're in the shower, it's a good idea to massage your arm this way and that way. And I haven't done it because I didn't know whether I was supposed to or not. Is there any special way, or is that just another wife's tale,
It's nothing you need to add to your life at the moment.
Well, that's what I thought. I've got enough crap going on with everything to worry about that as well.
Yeah.
Oh, that's good then.
Yeah. No, just use the soap-free wash, put a bit of moisturiser on,
and then
do the exercise you can and rest when you need to.
Yeah, beautiful.
That's enough.
Thank you.
That's plenty. do you need to wear a compression sleeve flying 3 or 4 hours to Perth? Again, it's something to discuss with your therapist.
Mm-hmm. All right.
get it by.
I went to Bali and I was alright. That was 6 hours in a small plane. But I got up. Every half an hour I got up.
So did anyone else have any other questions that you wanted to
ask? One of the questions I have is, one of the things I've been reading and I'm talking to people about is that people that are having acupuncture it doesn't break the skin.
Laser.
Yeah, with laser acupuncture. Mm-hmm. And they're saying that actually some nerves can grow again from that. Is that true?
Mm. Well, that's it's research I haven't read yet. It's conventionally understood that these nodes don't regrow. Mm. There has been, I think, some cases of lymph node regrowth in the abdominal area, but generally our understanding is that lymph nodes don't regrow. Mm. So there isn't an evidence base to say that laser acupuncture does generate that.
Mm-hmm. Is that acupuncture with the laser, as it doesn't break the skin, is it helpful?
Again, there isn't an evidence base to say, one way or the other at this stage.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But you'd imagine that something that's not damaging the skin is probably, safer than something that is. So certainly we would recommend that you avoid having acupuncture needles in an area at risk or an area of swelling. Doesn't mean you've got headaches, you can't have acupuncture needles in your head and other parts of your body, but on an affected area, mm-hmm. avoid. For the same reasons that we suggest to avoid injections. They're tiny needles, but their skin breaks. Something then your body has to heal and work harder to do.
Any other questions?
Yes?
Do you get
good question. So, generally, most commonly, lymphedema develops after a latent period. So there's often, people often have surgery, have other treatments, and it's sort of, down the track a little bit, often within the first couple of years when symptoms appear. So most commonly, you might have some treatment-related swelling that goes away, there's nothing, and then something starts to happen within the first couple of years. That would be the most common presentation. And often there's no apparent reason for that. You haven't done anything, it just happens. You haven't actually done excessive activity or had an infection. It just comes on by itself. And that's the most common presentation. However, if you've had lymph nodes removed, the risk is lifelong. So more rarely we have people coming in, 10 years later, 20 years later. For example, if someone gets older, we've had people who've fallen over and broken their wrist. They've had a nasty fracture, in fact they've had an operation on that arm, and that becomes something that overloads the lymphatic system and they do get ongoing problems with swelling. So you can't stop other events happening. But most commonly it's nearer to the event.
My doctor told me not to worry about it. I've had three taken out, I've had a
sentinel lymph node
taken out. And then he said, you've got enough in there, don't worry. So I haven't avoided this workshop because I thought, I'm not in that group. And then someone says something, they go, you are, and go and find out about it, even though it's low risk.
Even though it's small, like 2 to 6.
So with people in my situation, would that be the same example that you gave 10 years later, something could happen?
You stay in the risk group, but the risk is small.
Lower.
Yeah. So unfortunately, we didn't count, sort of put together a checklist of who may and who may not develop something.
Yes.
People can have the same surgery and sort of match backgrounds, and one develops symptoms and one doesn't.
Yes.
You know how you said that exercise and everything else, which is great. So we answered all those questions in one thing. But what about basketball and netball and things like that? That's still okay, and you just go back into it as soon as you feel physically fit.
Yeah, we're returning to things that you used to do.
It's
just taking it slowly. You might not have the whole game the first time.
Yeah.
And I mean, netball's non-contact.
Oh well, yeah. And that's basketball, that's supposedly.
Right.
Yeah.
So I mean, you just weigh it up and just take risks.
See how you feel and everything else. Don't have a
do you think taking a long flight
without wearing a compression sleeve can cause it?
Well, again, I said we don't have a good evidence base to say that that's the case. You can't really do it. You can't put 100 people on a flight and compare them to 100 that don't. But every year we would have a few patients who say that seems to have been what precipitated their swelling. However, sometimes people will go on a plane or go somewhere hot and do unusual activities, it may not be that's the whole story either. Mm-hmm. It might be a combination of things.
Yes. We're all individuals doing different things.
Yes, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Do you have to use a pH neutral product for the rest of your life?
You don't have to do anything.
I mean, it's
suggested that, the goal is to keep the skin as healthy as you can. And so our skin gets drier with age anyway, and so it's something, it's kind to your skin to sort of go on using it, yeah.
Should it maybe be avoiding moisturisers with perfumes and things like that in the
Look, a plain moisturiser is probably desirable, but people get nice things and they use them and just mix it up,
This much left in the bottle.
Yeah, they use what you've got. It's only really if you're starting to use a product and you're not sure how your skin's going to go. Yeah. Some people if you've got skin that's likely to be rashy or reactive, then we suggest start with something plain.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's just about good habits. You brush your teeth every day. Looking after your skin is about the kinds of things to do to avoid using soap and moisturise.
Organic products too that do have some essential oil in there that's got a nice smell, but it does feel beautiful on your skin.
And if you're worried, just try it on a bit of your skin that's not, not an area that's at risk. Not sure about it.
Does soap only have any petrochemicals in it?
I don't know, you'd have to ask the chemist.
Sorbolene. Everybody suggests you use sorbolene.
Look, I think sorbolene is a reasonably cheap and widely available moisturiser. And often the dermatologists will say use sorbolene. Like, it's a basic product, people can get their hands on it. And they can, use it fairly generously. So there's no use having skincare products and using them out, in China. You do need to use it generously. So, but our experience would be that, we see skin in varying condition. If you've got reasonably normal, healthy skin, then probably a basic sorbolene will do the job. But sometimes people have got dry skin or skin that needs better products. And my caution would be that it's best if you're going to use sorbolene, to use a pharmacy grade one, not one from a $2 shop, because I'm sure that's not the same. Yeah, so it's just, it's a general term, and what's in the bottle might vary. Okay. Oh, that's all. Something happened to my last slide. Anyway, my last slide is just sorry. And where it's gone. So, yes, key messages are that lymphedema is only going to happen to a small number of people. 80% of people will not have trouble. And certainly, if symptoms do develop, most people are getting help early, and that's the best thing to do. Get help early, report minor symptoms, and that will help arrest this further changes. And we just encourage you to, feel confident to, return to normal movement, normal activity, normal life as much as you can. And take good care of yourself. Thank you for your attention.
Thank you.
We hope you enjoyed this podcast. You can subscribe to Brecan Podcasts or browse existing podcasts by visiting www.brecan.org.au.